Welcome to the Altus Group podcast series. In part one of a three-part series, Ross Litkenhouse, Vice President of Strategic Development at Altus Group, is speaking with Robert Kilroy, a longtime industry participant, developer, and investor living in Charlotte, North Carolina. And these gentlemen are going to discuss the current state of the student housing market, significant market trends, and key differences between student housing versus traditional multifamily development.
Thanks, Matt. Rob, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Good to see you. Thanks so much.
We go back quite a ways over a number of companies, a number of market cycles, and I think you've firmly established yourself, certainly over the last decade, as an expert and a veteran in student housing. And it happens to be an asset class and an area of the market that I'm passionate and interested about. One is as a former graduate student with some student loan debt, but also having followed these cycles closely for the purposes of property tax consulting. But nonetheless, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with us today. And I want to start off with a question, just generally kind of set the stage here. Where is student housing in terms of the market cycle?
So if you look at student housing on a very broad basis, the industry is really maturing very rapidly. Deliveries have been in the 40,000 bed per year range for the last couple of 3 years, and it looks like that delivery schedule will hold. The product in almost every market is very well received. It is comparably priced to what students have to pay to live on campus. Average occupancy rates across the United States in purpose-built student housing have been in the 95% range for the last several years. And so I look at the market as being, one, very attractive. Debt, permanent debt, is remarkably available through the agencies, through LifeCos, at rates that generally are lower than cap rates for the product. And so I am very bullish about where we are. I think there is plenty of room for additional development in a variety of settings in a range of locations, and so I'm very bullish about where we are and the performance of the communities that are in place.
So we've talked a little bit leading up to this podcast. I have some macro concerns related to the market, and I published some articles, one I think it was about a year and a half ago, on LinkedIn, which you've had a chance to read, and I've also, you know, experienced working with a lot of developers and underwriting deals in various markets, and I continue to just be in awe of the increase in the per bed values, the compression in cap rates, the amount of supply, and how aggressive people are on deals. Is there a risk on the horizon in terms of getting to a little bit of a frothier market than we should probably be in? I don't want to use the term bubble, but are we moving in that direction here over the next 18 to 24 months?
Well, Ross, there's no doubt that there has been a very rapid escalation in the average per bed price for trades. As the concept has really matured, investors have really started to bid up the price of quality communities. And if you look back even 5 years, the spread and cap rate differential between where multifamily was trading and where student housing is trading has compressed remarkably. I mean, one might make an argument that 5 years ago when we were looking at a community, we automatically put a 100 basis point premium on student housing. That has really compressed. I think if you look at the broad statistics from the last couple of years, the spread has narrowed to something in the 10 to 20 basis point range, with a lot of the higher quality communities trading at less than where average multifamily is trading. So I think there is a risk of a bubble, but I would look at it more on a market-by-market basis than on a generic national basis. For there to really to be a bubble to exist, I think one of two things has to happen. Either we have to have a remarkable demand shortfall, and I don't see that happening as especially the public universities continue to move away from housing their upperclassmen on campus. And my personal view is that the desirability of a college education, especially a quality college education, has never been stronger and better supported with the statistics. So from a demand perspective, I think we're in very good shape. From a supply perspective, there are some places where, you know, you look and the market's clearly oversupplied. I think the market that we regularly point to that's a bit of a head scratcher is, for example, Texas A&M, where people who are very familiar with that market will tell you that we are 4 or 5 years away, even with the growing university, from a point where stabilization can occur. But the real constraint on supply, from my perspective, especially if you define supply in narrow terms, as new development, is that my personal experience is that the banks, for almost everyone who wants to borrow on construction lines, are very tight with their lending requirements. And you can talk about the range of guarantees. What really has led to difficulties from a borrower's perspective is the repayment guarantees that most banks are requiring. So on the one hand, I see relatively robust demand. On the other, when you factor in a tight construction lending market, very few good developable sites close to campus, and also the cost of building these communities, I don't see most markets being in a position to oversupply. So I think we're in relatively good position from a supply and demand perspective, and I think that will last for quite some time.
In terms of alternatives to student housing, when you think about decisions that students are making about where they want to live if they're going to class, can you describe the differences when you talk about student housing versus traditional multifamily?
Sure.
What would you say?
What we're really talking about here is what we would call purpose-built student housing. And purpose-built student housing really started to gather steam in the late 90s, early 2000s. And when you look at these communities, what they consist of is purpose-built residences where there generally is bed-bath parity. In other words, each bedroom, each private bedroom, where typically you have one student in one bedroom, has a private bath. Okay? So that's one. And these residents will consist of anywhere from, well, they're one to five bedrooms surrounding a common area where there's a kitchen, there's a study area, where there is often a TV set. Many of the units are furnished. Many of the units have washer and dryers and very serviceable kitchens. And so if you compare and contrast that unit configuration, and then you add in the range of student-friendly amenities, we may get back to this a little later, Ross, but kind of where amenities are going and where they've come from. The amenities are specifically designed for students, and a few of the trends that that we've seen that are particularly student-friendly, and this might surprise some of the listeners on our podcast, is that study areas, common study areas, are very, very popular. And whether those are meeting rooms where groups can meet, or general study areas that offer a Carroll-like environment, Students are very serious, and this may be a byproduct of the student debt that we've been talking about, but the common perception is that these communities are party houses, and my experience is that it's quite the contrary, that students today are very serious, that that's common area study areas are very, very important to them. Given the fact that these communities are built in a variety of locations, bike storage is important. I know there's been some have tried bike maintenance facilities that generally have not worked out quite as well. And then there are varying degrees of food services within these communities, from the low end of just vending machines to the higher end of having dining facilities built into the communities, provides a range of amenities that is very compelling. So that's really what we're talking about, and if you contrast this with what you and I would consider to be conventional multifamily, I don't have to go through the range of unit layouts and amenities, et cetera, at multifamily. But as student housing developers have learned more and more about the business, what's happened is that they've been able to tailor what they're offering to meet the compelling needs of the students. And that, as it turns out, is quite different from what you'll find in traditional multifamily.
Now, when you're analyzing markets, and you know, there obviously has to be some comparison between the supply of existing multifamily, the amenities or the layouts may be attractive to students versus this purpose-built student housing. Do you go through an analysis to kind of look at the price delta on a per square foot basis? I know we talk a lot in student housing about, you know, cost per bed, and that's what's driving a lot of the metrics. But, you know, do you look at it in terms of, all right, this is the amenity, this is what folks are getting in purpose-built student housing versus traditional multifamily, especially if it's off campus? Is there a comparison to be made in terms of kind of rent per square foot that you might see in the multifamily sector? Is that a metric you look at, or is it not really relevant?
Well, it's always relevant, and I think we look at a wide range of statistics, and this comes back to the maturation of the business and a variety of lessons learned by developers. And so my response would be yes. I mean, the standard analysis is cost and revenue per bed, but the broader consideration is, especially on the development side, what it really is costing to deliver these communities on a per square foot basis. And there are all sorts of considerations with that. For example, when we're designing a new community, my operating hypothesis is that the average rentable square foot across the interior unit will be about 400 rentable square feet per bed. And so when we're designing with our architects, we'll start out at maybe a little less than that. But if you're building a four-bedroom, four-bath kind of standard unit, you're probably looking at a unit size of something in the 1,500 to 1,600 square foot range. And so these are statistics that we regularly look and think through. And if you see a community, for example, that has, instead of 400, it's 500 or 600, you have to start wondering about the operating efficiencies and whether people will pay up for the additional square footage.
Are you traditionally looking at stick-built for most of the student housing, or does it depend upon zoning requirements? Does it depend upon what, you know, schools may need or what works in a particular locale?
Well,
I guess what I'm saying is it a similar analysis that you someone would go through if they were looking to build traditional multifamily in a market versus student housing? You kind of look at...
Oh, of course.
What's the, okay.
No doubt.
And, we got to really go for stick build because that makes the most sense and that's the best ROI.
No. I mean, if you're in a school with a relatively wealthy population and you have a site that is proximate to campus and you feel you can charge more, then you're going to want to get as many residents on the site as you possibly can. A market that I'm fairly familiar with, for example, University of Maryland in College Park, where there are two very recent examples of mid-rise buildings that are not stick built, and where the developers have just done remarkably well. And that is because they delivered into a market that was tremendously underserved in locations that were proximate to campus. And because of that, I mean, they were, the proven sales pricing of these communities where, I mean, we've seen the per bed pricing over the last few years go up from, let's say, $50,000 per bed to $80,000 per bed on average. But there are plenty of examples where it's not 80, it's 120 and maybe even 150 per bed. And so we go through a very thoughtful process with our architects, our general contractors, our structural engineers, the whole range of consultants that we'll use to figure out the best size pricing trade-off that we can build given the zoning and the entitlements.
Do you still feel like in terms of commercial real estate development as a whole that student housing is still considered a bit of a cottage industry? I mean, it's very much institutionalized in terms of money that's chasing it, debt that's chasing it, but in terms of, you know, how folks look at portfolio allocation, is it lower on the... It is.
And when you look at over the last couple of years, the buyers of communities, it tells a remarkable story. A lot of the communities that trade are trading to individual investors, high net worth, that's an important part of the market. International trades have just soared. And when you look at the big portfolio trades that comprise, let's say, on average 40% of the market, I would point to huge transactions accomplished by Mapletree from Singapore, GIC, and the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board with Scion. There's just a remarkable amount of offshore interest in the product because, of course, it's deemed somewhat recession-proof as the market has matured. A lot of the myths of the product have been wrung out of the risk-return
analysis. What were some of those myths?
I would say we've already talked about one, that off-campus housing can't really compete with on-campus housing. That has turned out to be really quite untrue. Students would be unable to pay up for a luxury product is another. So a lot of the risk, the risk of opening on time is still a very real risk that is probably the greatest risk still in the market. But just because it is recognized as the biggest, perhaps one of the biggest risks, developers have worked very hard to deliver on a timely basis.
You just heard an exclusive Altus Group podcast interview where Ross Lichtenhouse, Vice President of Strategic Development at Altus Group, spoke with Robert Kilroy, a longtime industry participant and developer and investor living in Charlotte, North Carolina. And as you heard, Ross and Robert spoke about the current state of the student housing market, significant market trends, and key differences between student housing versus traditional multifamily development.